Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrood.
I'm back. I'm very fucking happy today. This is going to be a blast.
And we've got good Jan.
Good evening, Pioli haters.
And to all the doubters, including me, who thought we would never get a result against Juve away, not in my lifetime anyway, 10 years it's been. Well, sometimes, lads, I suppose football can be horrendously cruel, you know. A couple of the recent episodes, one of them that AJ missed when we were kind of recapping the loss against Sassuolo, and then the one when we were recapping the loss against Lazio, everything felt so doom and gloom, like we'd completely surrendered the good position that we've had for the vast majority of the season. You know, we were dropping points, the performances were suffering, we were, you know, lapsing in concentration at the back. And then sometimes football can say, forget all logic, forget previous form, forget trends, forget a 10-year run of losses at a certain stadium, because it's your day, it's your night. And that is exactly what has happened tonight. Just, you can see it, like, from the moment we hit record, smiles on our faces. It just means so much, particularly against this lot, you know. It means a lot to beat Juve. But just the manner of doing it, what it means for the grand scheme of the season, the performance as a whole from individuals and as a collective, the little bonuses that come with it, like it being a 6-pointer, and then like the fact that we're now ahead on the head-to-head, you know, the fact that with 3 games to go, our destiny is completely in our own hands again now. Seeing the buzz of the players, you know, for once the fans giving them that send-off at Milanello this morning was not wasted, and we can look back on it. It's just one of the great days to support this club.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people talk about Milan's curse of the number 9. I'd argue Juve has a curse of the 9 after 9 straight Scudettos and missing out, beating Milan at home 9 straight seasons and now missing out. I think they got the curse of the 9. Oh, and Morata blanking, so that's cool.
Yeah, Morata was poor. Right.
Obviously, a fantastic win. Can't even describe how good it is, but we need to now take this energy into Wednesday and get the job done again in Turin. Otherwise, ultimately, it means nothing. Not putting a downer on it, but we now just need 6 more points and we're there. Potentially 3, and we're there, so it's huge.
Yeah, we could be talking about securing Champions League at this time next week. And that would be the greatest thing ever.
It would be really nice to have it wrapped up before that Atalanta game because, you know, I ain't trying to put a downer on it. That still looks like an ominous game to me, especially if Atalanta still need to win. The ideal is we've both sealed it going into that final game and it'll become almost just a pre-season game and it'll be more ceremonial than anything else. But today's result just puts us in such a fantastic position. I don't even know where to begin with the positives. And this has just not been like us for the last few weeks. But I genuinely do not know what to pinpoint first and say absolutely fantastic. So I think logically, let's just let's go through the goals first and then the players that were involved in them. I think that on the balance of play after the first 45 minutes, we probably deserved to be leading. Juve hadn't had a sniff at goal, whereas we were just showing the same signs of pressing high, winning the ball in dangerous areas, but not quite being ruthless enough in the final third. It's been a familiar story for us. For example, that pass Brahim Diaz got and he turned on goal and he hit it straight at Szczesny when, you know, a couple of minutes prior he'd hit one over the bar, and you just think, you back him to have that chance a third time and he's going to put it in. And that's exactly what happened. But yeah.
Yeah. I think the first half was a lot more even than people are going to remember just because of the result, you know, we dominated, but the first half, if you look at the halftime stats, they had more possession, more completed passes, more corners, more shots on goal or no, I'm sorry, just more shots. They had zero. They had one on goal all day, but in first half they had zero. And we had the goal. So, obviously, we went into half, and it was a deserved lead, but it was absolutely a tight game at half still. I wasn't as supremely confident going into halftime as I was going into the last 15 minutes, that's for sure. I'm just happy, man. I don't even care. Like, get it.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, some of the games, obviously, the losses and the disappointing draws we've had this season, we don't want to analyze because it's depressing. This is almost like, don't, because there's too much to say. You know, we're just absolutely glowing. But need to compliment Brahim for that finish. Like I said, missed a couple of half chances prior to that goal. But a couple of things. First of all, I thought it was actually a pretty poor free kick that came in from the right side that Szczęsny just absolutely flapped at for no apparent reason. I thought he could have caught it, but he kind of got stuck between that and sort of forearming it away. And it fell to Brahim. And the video's on our Twitter if you haven't seen it, but really intelligent piece of play by Ibra as well, because he just sort of stands behind Szczęsny and stops him backpedaling into his goal. How much of an impact that made, we don't really know, because the shot was right into the top corner. You know, there was no stopping it once it left his boot. But still, just little things like that, you think that is a heads-up play, and that's really good, like an NBA-style screen. But yeah, fantastic technique for that goal. Perfect time to score as well. I always say, I mean, I know it's a footballing cliche, but if you score just before the break, we were absolutely buzzing in the dressing room, and it really knocked the stuffing out of them. I'm delighted for Brahim.
When it's a really close game like that was, and then seconds before halftime whistle, you concede. Now you have 15 minutes where you just have to sit there and think about how you just went down. You know, you could strategize how you want to come back, but you don't get to react right away. And that's when you're at most danger, I think, is right after you score and they get the ball back and they have to push real hard. Whereas this, it was just like, we scored. We get to celebrate, we get the jitters out, and then it's head back in the game. And for them, it was wallow in it. So it absolutely psychologically plays a huge, huge role. And with this Juve team under Pirlo, they're not mentally strong as is. So Valeri was fantastic today, and I never thought I'd say that in my life.
Yeah, I thought he was a very, very good official.
I thought
today,
he was going to disallow the Brahim goal, to be honest.
Yeah,
I did.
I guess you can't really see, but it hit like right there, might have bounced up. But yeah, I think sleeve is still considered fine. I don't know the rules; they change it every week.
It's fine as long as it doesn't touch your arm outright. And it was fine. It definitely made contact with his stomach first, and then it seemed to spin up and off his far. But I mean, there were several angles. They got a clear look at it, and they decided they didn't even tell Valeri to look at the monitor.
Zlatan's disallowed goal against Fiorentina.
It was similar to the Kessier one, you know, against United, where it spun up. And
that didn't even hit his arm. You can't prove it. So
exactly, but at least he had the angles this time. And the VAR, Calvarese, he made the decision on that. He didn't even tell Valeri to look at the monitor. So props for that.
No, he did. He went to the monitor.
Not for the handball, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He went for both of them because I was like, oh, shit, here we go.
I thought he was stood in the center circle and he was like that, and then he just went and pointed to the spot.
He did.
I don't think he looked for that, but he looked for the penalty, obviously.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. And the penalty.
I was nervous about that too because he looked at it for significantly longer than needed. I mean, I at first was like, ah, there's probably no pen. Like, you know, everyone could just call us for it when there's a block. But one replay, I was like, oh, that's the clearest pen I've ever seen. So I was concerned how long it took him. I think maybe he was thinking over, like, was it deliberate and this is a red card offense, or was it just this is a handball, let's give him a yellow? I think that's what he was thinking about for so long. But
the one thing I will say is that the obviously the rule now is about, you know, unnaturally enlarging your frame and stuff like that. So I think that the one tiny fraction of doubt might have been the fact that Chiellini dragged his arm back in so quickly after he hit it. But then once you pause it on that moment and it hits him and his arm's outstretched, there was just no doubt about it.
I can't see anything. His forearm, you know, and the way he has it, he's like out, and you could see him just lift it up and eat it. So
the thing is that is a perfect use of the law as well, because it wasn't given in normal time. And I know referees don't give stuff because they hope VAR can help them in moments like that. But it wasn't given, you know, during the incident taking place. And also, if you look at that angle from behind, that shot from Brahim's going straight into the top corner. and well, he blocked it with his arm. So that is exactly why the rule is in place. Mm-hmm. It wasn't deliberate, so it wasn't a red card. It's not like he's saved it, but at the same time, it was just, yeah, a good use of the technology, and it's just a shame we couldn't capitalise on it.
What I will say, Brahim, I thought he had a really good game. Obviously, the goal meant to win the penalty. There were other parts in the game where he found in nice little bit pocket space, creating, taking a few chances. And I'm going to say it, props to Pioli for putting him in and dropping Rebic and Leao. Because in a game like that, you'd put Rebic or Leao in 9 out of 10.
That was a huge risk. Huge risk. I mean, Brahim got very few starts. And
yeah,
we all were kind of not really saying this is weird, but we all thought, interesting choice when it came out earlier this week that he was testing a 4-4-2. We're like, cool, you know, that shows the adaptability that we've all been asking for. But we were a little confused about Brahim. Now, obviously, it wasn't a 4-4-2 in reality when it came out. It was still the 4-2-3-1. I think it was a 4-4-2 for a little bit when we were in defense. But for the most part, it was still 4-2-3-1. But yeah, Brahim was a big call. And even it allowed Rebic, when he did come on, to play alone up top, you know, and he looked great. He didn't have to fall back. So
I think at times it were a 4-2-2-2. I always have to like stop for a second on that. So I don't say too many twos. The way that like Hakan, Brahim, and Salamakers, they were all just changing the positions constantly, causing problems. It was just free flowing. And at times, some of the football that we were playing were brilliant. And I was saying to AJ just before we started the podcast that when Chiesa in the second half then went over to the right-hand side against Teo, Salamakers quickly went over to that side, helped out defensively, and Chiesa ultimately ended up coming off.
There were one moment in the game when I noticed, and this was in the period in the first half when we were playing our best football, that it was almost like a diamond 4-4-2, but the tip of the diamond, you know, as the number 10, wasn't actually Hakan or Brahim, it was Ibra. Ibra was dropping deep again. And Salamakers and Brahim were the runners in behind him because he was coming in to win the flick-ons and to sort of play make as he does. He quarterbacks.
And it worked. I thought him and Brahim had really good link-up play. I thought they looked good together.
He was pulling Chiellini and Dilly out of position and it just worked well. In the first half, what I will say is I think we did get a bit lucky because, yes, we've kept a clean sheet, but it kind of proves our point now that maybe a world-class goalkeeper is it needed as long as your defence is right, because a couple of times Gio could have cost us.
I would argue he was our worst player today.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. To be fair, because he did make that nice little save in the second half just after he missed a penalty, I think, which kept it at 1-0. But other than that, it was poor, and it kind of proves that you don't need a world-class goalkeeper to win. You just need a solid defence and then someone there, because that could have been horrific if Chiellini had scored.
Yeah, exactly, that header. I don't know what he's seen there. It's a good job Chiellini's unsighted, because otherwise it's a header into an empty net. The one thing I will say on Juve, the save you were on about was, I think, one on Dybala in the closing stages.
No, it was in...
Obviously, the one that just after the penalty.
Literally just after, and he kind of like...
Yeah, I can't remember who that was. But he did make a good save later on Dybala. And one thing I will say, if you're a Juve fan, you must be absolutely fuming that he's not getting a game, because he came on and did more in about 15 minutes than Morata and Ronaldo combined throughout the 90.
Yeah.
You know, he came on and at least wanted to get on. Yeah. Yeah. He came on and at least wanted to get on the ball, and he dribbles at people, and he's good to watch, like on the eye. He's a silky player. And yeah, you've got to be looking at that and thinking, like, for example, Chiesa to me looked unfit, and there were rumours that he would miss the game, but then he's obviously been thrown in there. First of all, playing on the left wing when he had all of his joy in the reverse fixture, playing on their right wing and running at Teo, and then, you know, they finally switched his sides and it was just a bit too late.
Pirlo just doesn't have – he doesn't have a – I don't want to say he doesn't have a plan, because he obviously does, but it sure doesn't seem like it. You know, this is match week 35, and it was their 35th different starting 11. They've never fielded the same 11 once. So I don't know what they're doing this late in the season. Like, how have you not found who your best players are? And I know they have the depth to change things up a lot more, but it's not like they're in a lot of competitions. You know, it's not like they have anything left to play for but Champions League qualification. Like, they should know by now who their 11 is. So the fact that they still had to change something up for this game is just so odd. I don't know what's going on with them.
It's funny you say that, though, because like we were talking before the game thinking, what's Pioli doing changing it up in a big game like this? But we can say it as the team that's won 3-0 that it worked an absolute treat for us. But I think with Pirlo, there's no method to his madness at all.
Right.
He just sort of throws out combinations of the big name players that they've got and hopes that something works. Like,
well, and even
I don't understand.
The way we changed it up is very minimal. You know, we made two changes from the last time out, and
really I think it was three. Three.
But I think Juve had four changes, and it was weird because we still at least like we kept the same formation. We just changed up the tactics a little bit, but Juve just seems like they said, all right, this name, like just pulling names out of a hat, and that's just picking who they're playing.
Which is what they could do a couple of years ago in Serie A when there was no competition, like the team sort of fielded itself, so did the second 11. But now that you've got 5-6 very strong sides, you can't do that, and they need a competent manager. And
that's probably what Agnelli was hoping for when he appointed Pirlo, thinking he could save some money, you know, because he's got this Ronaldo money on the books and he's walked the league for 9 years in a row. He probably thought like we could just get away with it, not paying attention to Inter, you know, spending themselves into a black hole and us improving as well and everyone else. So, oh well, I'm happy to see them fall. There's honestly, it's the greatest thing to happen to me.
I was surprised. Like, obviously, our record at the Allianz Stadium or Juventus Stadium is bad. And it's bad because of a combination of the fact that they've been a dominant team within this league. And also, we've never really been smart in games against them away from home. I remember in the last few years, there's been games where we took the lead and we couldn't hold on to it late on. One of them where Moise Kean scored the winner, and then the one where we should have got a point and Dybala scored a late winner, 1-0. Just games where we've been very much in them, but we've come away empty-handed because of sloppy mistakes, because of silly errors, because we overcommitted, we got too overconfident. But today, I think that is probably our most streetwise performance of the season. And I know I've used that word before, but it just... Nothing about it seemed naive, like we've seen in the Lazio game, where obviously we went behind early, which didn't help, but I thought our game management wasn't particularly good. We left ourselves too wide open at the back, and always helps when you're defending a lead, especially against a team that struggles to break other sides down. But I just thought that even when Ibrahimovic went off, the way that we managed that game was absolutely superb. It was like a team that had won 9 league titles in a row. That was how well we managed the game. And, you know, if you want an example of just how much we controlled it, you know, Ibra goes off, Rebic comes on. We actually looked more threatening because Rebic was dropping almost like a false nine and everything was going through him. And then that second goal that we got, the one that he scored, was just a perfect example of how, you know, you can still be semi-aggressive with the press. You can take advantage of them turning the ball over. And because of the position we've got ourselves in with hard work, one vertical pass from Bennacer that was an absolute beauty, by the way, finds Rebic and bang, 2-0. We've punished them, you know, and that is the sign of a team that has grown quite a lot psychologically.
When Zlatan... Go ahead.
I think that we need to credit some of the subs too, because obviously when he came off, the kind of logical decision would have probably been to bring Mandzukic on just for a similar type of player that's just going to hold the ball up like Ibra were doing. So then to bring Rebic on and maybe not throw Leao in there for the pace, that worked really well. Another decision that kind of went in our favour, I think most of us wanted Tonali to start, me especially, this week, and then to keep the trust in Bennacer, who I thought were fantastic in midfield, like you said, with that pass. I just thought he had a brilliant game, and I just think everything clicked today. It was kind of like what we'd seen post-lockdown the start of this season, where we were ruthless, we took our chances. The football was a joy to watch. The press was good. Just everything clicked. And I just hope this is enough now to see us through the next three games and then kind of restart again in the summer, get a couple of new signings in, and we go again.
Yeah, I was going to honestly touch on something similar. When Zlatan was on, Juve had to man mark. You know, Chiellini was right on him the whole time. De Ligt was there the whole time. As soon as that target comes off, that threat, and Rebic comes on, who they know isn't going to be this big physical imposing person, they switch from a man marking setup to a zonal. And because they did that, they left all that space. They gave him so much room. And that's what led to that immediate goal. They weren't ready. It was, I don't know how many minutes after Zlatan came off did he score? It couldn't have been 10 at most, yeah. 15 maybe.
Within 10, yeah. I reckon.
Yeah.
Less yeah, it was real fast. So it was like Rebic's first contribution to the game, and Juve just was caught sleeping. You know, they were zonal. They were ready. They said, all right, he's going to fall in. He doesn't take these long shots. He's going to make look for the pass. He's going to look for Brahim running. He's in form. And he just took it first time. That's all he needed. So
I think the annoying thing
great
about Rebic is like that's his second goal in a row now that's been an absolute wilder. And then it comes to the easy chances, which has let us down so many times, not just him, so many times this season where we could have actually still been in games, taking the leads in games. And it is just nice to see the clinical side back. Just everything about the performance was polished. I think the midfield, especially Kessié, obviously people are going on at him about missing the penalty, but it was phenomenal, I thought, in midfield. He bossed it. When he turned, I think it were Chiellini and Billet inside out and sent them both back to the training ground. And then he won and then he won the free kick, if I'm not mistaken, for the third goal, where he carried five Juventus players on his back.
He had that incredible pirouette, that dummy that went straight to Teo for an attack.
Kessié
was one of our best players of the day. And you know, you could hate on him for missing a penalty, but at the end of the day, he's missed two penalties his entire Milan career. Two. Out of
fantastic.
I think he was on seven straight at this point. And you know, you look at Zlatan, I think he missed four out of seven penalties that he took this season. So don't hate on Kessié for that, especially after we won 3-0. You know, like had we have lost that game, sure, you could get a little mad, but I don't know. I don't think it matters at this point. Like
he tried something
different and it failed, whatever.
Yeah, if that penalty had gone in, Juve would have had enough time in the game to, like, you know, kind of be a turning point. Dybala might have been going on earlier. I'm not saying the game would have changed and they'd have got a draw or something from it, but it certainly would have been a lot more tense at 2-0 because it's such a dangerous scoreline.
Oh, yeah.
One goal for Juve. But go 2-0 up with, 15 minutes to go?
Yeah. Well, when we're only 1-0 up and, like, it's a team Juve. You saw what Ronaldo did last week when they were down 1-0 in the 80th minute and he just popped in a brace real quick. Like, they don't feel the pressure because they know that they have that impact player who could immediately change things. So as soon as it goes 2-0, now there's that pressure. Now you have to react immediately. And you're right. It could absolutely change the game. They say it all the time. It's a cliche, but a 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in the game, you know?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they found that out when they went 2-0 up at our place post-lockdown last season. Yeah, and we came roaring back, you know, and obviously won 4-2. But is it weird that I was more nervous at 3-0 than I was at 2-0 because I wanted us to keep that head-to-head advantage? You know, I would have been gutted if we'd have conceded because they've got a better goal difference.
When Dybala came on at 3-0 and he was just taking the shots and creating stuff for Juve, that's when I was getting nervous. But credit to the lads, every single player put his body on the line when they were defending the corners, the crosses, and it was fantastic. I can't begin to describe how good of a performance it really was.
Yeah, it was.
And then tomorrow getting his first Serie A goal and just the icing on the cake for what was a dominant performance from him too. Like, he was fantastic. Him and Kier were both just phenomenal together.
They were. I mean, I put out a tweet after the game as a bit of a joke, like the whole Kier emptying his pockets when he gets home and it was like the phone, the wallet, and then Cristiano Ronaldo. A few people chimed in and were like, do you mean Tomori? And to be honest, they both did a fantastic job of keeping both strikers quiet. Yeah, and that says it all.
Honestly, the one criticism of that tweet, what I would do, I would have put more Juve players in his pocket.
Maybe, Ronaldo and Morata.
Yeah, exactly.
And Calabria, I thought Calabria was outstanding as well. Oh. They had nothing down the right side. And I think we're at the point now where we have to say he's Italy's best right back without a shadow of a doubt.
He shut down Ronaldo on three separate occasions, just completely shut him down.
Chiesa in that first half, like he knew when to just have a little... He got beat once by Chiesa first half and he knew when to just have a little tug at his shirt and stop it. And he didn't even get a yellow for it, you know. So he was quite smart on that particular thing. But apart from that...
If you don't go to the Euros, then it's a bit of a joke. But for Calabria to come back from the injury, like in the past, he's had a good season, then he's been injured and he's never really come back from the injury. He's kind of been poor, but he's just bounced back straight away. And that right side, him and Salamakers are just fantastic. And
got the chemistry, haven't they?
Salamakers will win a Ballon d'Or next year. I'll go on record and say it now. So.
Oh, well, he's suspended for the next game.
Yeah. That's okay, to an extent. Like, I hope we do something with that. I hope we don't just stick Castillejo in there.
I just said to AJ before we started recording, I'd put Dallo at right wing, because when he came on, he was fantastic, I thought. And he played in, like, an advanced right-sided role, so...
He has a role, doesn't he, Dallo, when he comes on sort of late in games and we've got the lead. He's that physical winger that we use for the breaks. Like, we just give him the ball and let him run. And, like, it worked perfectly for the goal against Parma to make it 3-1. And there were a couple of occasions tonight where you thought, oh, if he gets galloping here, you know, they're knackered. But no, it was fantastic. Okay. The third goal as well. I just want to say, I didn't even really properly watch it because the free kick was from such an unthreatening position. It was like middle-ish of the field, slightly to the right. And then Hakan just sort of, I don't know, almost arrogantly clips it in towards the penalty spot. And it's like he will never score an easy event.
Honestly, I would have missed it too had it not been for me. I was chatting shit to people on Twitter and I get an update from Gian that said Tomori goal. And I'm like, oh shit, we scored a third? So he spoiled it for me, but that's the only reason I looked up. Like I was still in full hype beast mode. I was talking so much shit.
I was just literally, I was just bashing the keyboard just randomly.
Oh, I'm not even mad. Like, if there's one goal to spoil, it's the third goal in a 3-0 Juve victory. Like,
yeah.
Let's do it.
I just love the fact, like, when me and Ollie went to the derby and we witnessed Milan thumping to 3-0, Alex scored that towering header. And then Fix just done it again. And, oh, just unreal scenes. I love beating Juve, man. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Ultimately, we've now beaten them on two of the last three occasions in the league, which is pretty good. And do I feel that we've sort of got the upper hand on them now? Probably, because for all the star power that they have, they are just not playing as a team at all at the moment.
I think Pirlo gets sacked, though, so I wouldn't count this as like a turning point because we don't know what next season is going to look like for them.
I think he'll get sacked in the summer. I don't think he'll get sacked before the season ends. But even if you go back to the last five games, so the two Coppa Italia semi-final matches that we just played against them, we were the better team over the two legs, but obviously refereeing decisions ruined that form. And then, I'm not using it as an excuse, and then the one where we lost 3-1, we had six starters missing in Calabria centre-mid.
Castillejo was our starting striker.
Yeah, and we were still... I'd have said for parts of that game a better team, but they were just more clinical. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think we have the upper hand on them now, and I think their demise is coming and their downfall's coming, and if they get Champions League, it'll cripple them.
Well, it's going to happen.
I mentioned it last week about, you know, how much of a mess their accounts are in and how much Champions League revenue is important to them because it makes up a percentage basically of what they can spend, and without it, I think they're in a lot of trouble. I really do. But the thing with Juve is I just feel like they've kind of got a bailout option, because if they sack Pirlo, I think Allegri will go back there, and then they'll start a new cycle with him. Whether they go straight back to being Scudetto challengers next season, I don't know, because I feel like there's a lot of psychological damage done. And if, like, Chiellini retires, all of a sudden you're losing serial winners, and you look at that team 1-11, it doesn't scare me anymore. The thing that scared me was the front two. I thought we've probably got a defensive lapse in us because we haven't kept many clean sheets away from home at all. We saw what Lazio did to us. I was scared about their front two and Chiesa as well, and they were the thing that were disappointing for them.
We saw Benucci crying as well. So I think they're almost settling into this belief that they're not going to make it. I think they're almost accepted it, which is just going to hurt their performances the rest of the season.
I think it doesn't help them that
even if they do qualify, they're potentially not in it anyway. I mean, their season's kind of, I don't want to say finished, but apart from the Coppa Italia game, it kind of is. Obviously, they play at the weekend, but then they'll be thinking about the Coppa Italia match because that's their midweek.
Yeah. Their best bet is hoping that Inter field, like, just a Primavera side, you know? That's the only way they go through, because they have to focus on the Coppa Italia, or else it's a complete failure. If they don't get a single trophy this season, it's horrible for them. Like, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen.
The Super Cup doesn't count.
we can count it. We can count
but
it.
But we need to
No, I don't think Inter. I think Inter will play a strongest team, because there's no better or more emphatic way to sort of, you know, hand over the title than beating the champions twice,
getting the
beating them home and away.
Exactly.
Juventus Stadium or whatever it's called. Have they been handed the trophy yet? Did they get handed it at the weekend?
No, like they won't get handed to them until the end of the season, the final game, home game. But they had the guard of honor or whatever dumb shit against Ranieri.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with the guard of honor thing, but I just feel like
I would want it if it was Milan. But
yeah,
I don't want to see them having it.
We're at the thing, like, there's a few games to go. What's the point of doing all this now? Why can't we just wait for the final home game of the season, and then you can have everything, and then off you go. That's it.
Objectively, I think the guard of honor is cool. I think it's a good thing. It's something that every team should hope for, you know, but I don't want to see Inter having it ever. So this season, I think it's dumb.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with being entirely hypocritical on that.
Yeah, spot on. Next season, it might be us. Who knows?
COVID-19.
No fans to give him a guard of honor.
They're not going to have any players to receive their medals either, because they haven't paid for anyone. So they're all going back and the
They'll have to sell the medals for the precious metal.
So they have to sell their team bus.
I will just say that if we do get some point deductions and we finish second, then it's an actual Scudetto that we win. It's not a COVID turn. We deserved it, so fuck them.
Spot on, yeah. Spot on.
Exactly.
Anything else on the Juve game, guys? I mean, I feel like we could talk about it for hours and hours on end.
I think just the final point I really want to dig home is just fuck them.
Yeah.
Fuck them.
Can't disagree with that.
Yeah, I just want to big credit, obviously, to Pioli, but players like Hakan really stepped up when he needed to. And if he can play like that for the last three games of the season, then I think he might actually deserve his contract renewal, because he was a game changer today. I know, obviously, he didn't score, but two solid free kicks, and he started some nice attacks, some counter attacks and stuff. He was really good, I thought. But he just needs now to bring that consistency with him.
First half, when the game was scrappy, I don't think he did enough to grab it by the scruff of the neck. But then after we scored, and second half in particular, really, really grew into it. I've no problem with him when he's pulling the strings. You know, I think he's one of the best number 10s in the league, without a doubt, when he's in the game, when he's affecting it. My problem is, you know...
Well, even in the first half, he released Teo down that left-hand side when Alex Sandro made that brilliant cleaver.
Lovely little flick through that you don't get from ordinary midfielders, you know. And then that was a good one as well, when we sent him away again and Kessié did the dummy to let it run for him on the left wing, and then he went sprinting through. But yeah, I couldn't pick anyone out, you know, today and say they had a bad game.
But that's just being a bit picky, but he didn't have a good game, really.
Yeah.
Does that thing got our lowest rating? Well, that's an error on my part. It says 6.6. He got a 6.5.
Very specific.
Yeah, that was just a typo for me. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, and hopefully Zlatan's okay. I mean, Pioli said after the game, basically, that he just has a sore knee and it's not serious, hopefully. So,
a sore knee?
Yeah, I think he just landed a bit funny. And we'll see. I mean, if he were to be ruled out for the season, let's say, I might be a little more pessimistic about what's to come. But then it's like, if we can't get past Torino and Cagliari without him, then I don't know if we deserve top four anyway. But
I'm not too worried about the next two games. It's just that final game against Atalanta. But if Juve drop any points, then it doesn't even matter. You know, I'm celebrating a week early. That's my guard of honor.
I think if Ibra's out for the season, then Maldini will have to sit down with him and just say, look, you're going to have to drop your wage or something like that, because we can't go into next season paying $7 million a year just to be injured every other week.
You can't even consider him your starting striker at that point.
Yeah, and you can't have a $7 million a year striker on the bench.
No, you can't.
Three games out of the season.
I mean, yeah. even if as the reports sort of say, it's a lower fixed amount and a lot of it is bonuses to make it up to the full amount based on how many games he actually plays. That's smart, obviously.
Yeah.
But even if he's earning around the 5 million mark, you look at players in this squad like your Kessier, like your Teo, who's earning 2 million, 2.2, 1.5, all these key players that are earning so much less, and they're actually there for the 50-plus games a season. So, yeah, it's something to work out. It's an interesting balance, but I just think we know what we're getting with Ibra as well. It's not necessarily what happens within the 90 minutes or the 70 minutes that he plays. It's what we saw just before kickoff with the team huddle. It's what we saw when he was at the front of the bus, you know, going to the fans like, come on, make more noise and stuff like that. It's he knows what it means, and he's someone who's been here when we've won trophies. And I feel like he's playing such an important role in mentoring what is still ultimately a very young squad, that you're almost paying to have him as an extra head coach. And when you think about it like that, as long as it ends with something good in the short, medium term with this project, then it'll be money well spent. But it obviously is not ideal having him miss 30 games a season. Yeah, cool. Right. Torino away. We're still away, aren't we? So, yeah, a bit of an odd thing in the fixture schedule where we're playing in Turin away from home two games in a row. Torino Wednesday night, I guess after today's game, is going to feel like a bit of a less intense fixture. But it shouldn't, because as Jan rightly said, if we don't follow up the result today with a good performance and another 3 points against Torino, then it will have all been for nothing.
This is now a bigger game than what Juve's just been.
Because we're close now. The finish line felt a long way away. But with this win tonight, it's so much closer. But we've got to find a way to get over it. If we win the next two games, then we're in, aren't we, pretty much?
Yeah.
So it's very much in our hands in that sense.
It sounds daft, but on Wednesday, the aim should be go get two early goals. Because, let's be fair, Juve are going to be checking the score at half-time on Wednesday when they're playing against Sassuolo. And if they see that we're cruising, there's a lot of pressure then on them to go out. And if they drop points, then ultimately the Champions League's pretty much secured. So it's an important game to just literally hit the ground running, go have fun, go be clinical, be ruthless, and just get the 3 points and kind of hope that results go our way. But that's not the important thing. The important thing's the 3 points. But anything else then would be a bonus.
Yeah, if Juve drop any points and we win, like that's wrapped up. You know, we're three clear right now, four essentially with the head-to-head. If we win one more game and they drop points, like that's insurmountable with three games left in the season. So, and the good news is I think Torino's the easiest game of the season. I genuinely think they are the worst team in Serie A at the moment. They are so awful. We're riding a high. We know that, like you said, the finish line's right there, so close we could taste it. I would not be surprised if we seriously go out there. Just it's an away game. That's our form. I wouldn't be shocked if this is our 4-0, 5-0 victory this season.
I think it helps Torino and then Cagliari, who we play at the weekend, they're pretty much safe now. I think they're both 4 points behind Benevento and Spezia. So I think they're kind of comfortable now. So there's a bit less pressure off them to actually go out and try grind out a win.
Yeah, I would say that Torino, for the majority of the season, have been awful. Obviously, they were in the bottom three for a long period of time. But maybe this might be a blessing for us. They've managed to somehow steer their way to safety. Then they've won three of their last six, which for a team down the bottom end of the table is actually a pretty big deal.
Pretty good. Yeah, I mean, towards the end of the season, you want to play the teams that are, you know, already on the beach. They're already drinking their Mai Tais. They don't have anything to play for. They're just doing their job. And that's exactly where Torino is right now. I mean, they technically are still able to get relegated, but they got enough of a cushion to where I think they're going to be pretty chill. They're not a good enough team.
Their luck is going to be that there is comfortably three worst teams. I mean, Crotone are dreadful. I don't even think they'd be in the top half in Serie B this season. They've just been a waste of time. Benevento have just dropped like a stone. You know, as we keep saying, one win since January the 4th is just really bad, really bad. And then you know, I'm surprised by some of the teams that have been dragged into it.
Crotone is already relegated.
Yeah.
So is Parma. It's just Benevento.
Parma are awful as well. Torino's been lucky with injuries and stuff.
Well,
they should never have got rid of Diversa
at the midweek. Mm. There's not a chance in hell that's the team that they break their losing skid against. There's no chance. So Torino doesn't care about our game. They know that they have one more game, you know, that they could lose or whatever if they need it. But you just look at who. Look at this. Benevento plays Atalanta, which they're getting decimated. Crotone, they might win. But then Torino. That's the game that matters, not Torino-Milan. Torino-Benevento. And at that point, it's going to be all said and done anyways, I think.
And Belotti's going to be misfiring midweek anyway. He's going to score an own goal, take his top off, and start singing the Champions League anthem, holding Pioli's hand. So, we're all good.
Easy peasy.
You're right, yeah. Yeah, that, I am. The thing about Torino away is that it's one of them. It always seems to be a bit of a dodgy game for us. I always feels like we say that about a lot of away games. But like, for example, last season when we went there and we went 1-0 up and Belotti scored a late brace and they beat us 2-1 at their ground. Obviously, that was under Gianpaolo, so it was a different time. It felt like a much more pessimistic era. But I guess goes to show there could still be a bit of a banana skin. But I'm just hoping that and again, this is a phrase I've said a lot, but if we are serious and, you know, we're serious about qualifying for the top four and actually doing something and looking back and being proud of our achievements and stuff like that, there's no excuse for not winning a game like this.
It's what I've said
they're bums.
Few weeks.
We need to scramble.
Sound like a broken record, but he's literally just on players now. They showed it today that they cared about top four and they wanted it. You could see with the way they celebrated with the manager, with each other. It's down to them. Our team is more than capable of going to Turin again, playing against Torino without a manager, without any tactics and winning. And that's no disrespect to Torino. Our players are more than good enough to do that. And it's just whether we're clinical and ruthless. So like I said, I'd be tempted just to try go 2 goals up early and then rest some place for Cagliari, which is another must-win game. And then you win Cagliari and you go into the Atlanta game knowing you've qualified and it's all sweet.
Yeah, I think this is the game. We're gonna be shooting. Every shot is going to be...
Is your prediction actually a 5-0?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mine's a 2-0.
Yeah.
Salamaca double.
I think that's crazier than my prediction.
The McDouble. I will say 2-1. I think it's going to be a straightforward. Like, we're on such a high right now. It's almost hard to follow up a performance like today. I don't give a shit about us outplaying them. I don't give a shit about us turning into the Harlem Globetrotters against Torino or anything. Just win, results because business. Then we are basically there. Just I don't care how. I don't care if it's a 90th minute penalty. Just get it done, and then we're basically there. We're almost there, because I do think that Juve will drop points against Sassuolo. Based on that today, you know, Sassuolo have got exactly the kind of team that will hurt them. You know, with Berardi, with Raspadori, with Bogo, with Traore, they are just this kind of team that will hurt Juve.
I mean, obviously, this isn't how life works, but Sassuolo beat us, we beat Juve, so by that logic, Sassuolo beats Juve.
Sassuolo's already taken points off Juve this season, I believe, and we keep going on about Juve, but Napoli too, they've got an hard game against Udinese.
I think they're winning out. I think they're good for all night.
Yeah.
But if they drop points and we win, then that'd put us 6 clear of them with head-to-head advantage. So again, it'd be secured.
Mm-hmm.
So
the only team right now that like can finish above us, I think, is Atalanta. I think they're going to.
Yeah, I think Atalanta will as well. And I think they'll deserve it. You know, I don't like them. They're an irrelevant club. As you said in a tweet, they're just like, they're nothing. But at the same time, they've totally deserved it, because it's like them and Inter, the final sort of 15 games of the season, they've really gone into a different gear to everybody else. I don't know where Atalanta keep finding their energy from. Hint, hint.
Steroids.
Yeah. But they are, yeah, they're flying, and fair play to them. They're probably going to finish second. I think they'll win out the season. And I can't say that they don't deserve it. It would be a bit embarrassing for us, given how far ahead we were at one point. But just the way it goes, I suppose. And especially if we raid a couple of their players, like we get Ilicic and Malinovsky on the cheap, that'd be class.
Malinovsky, I'd love him. Wow.
Baller, absolutely great player.
I wonder if they're even going to try that hard against us. Final game of the season, they're going to have Champions League secured. They're going to be coming off a Coppa Italia final. They're only actually going to get real silverware ever. I bet they go all out against Juve and they're a bit tired for us, and maybe that plays in our favor.
And we'll have a week's rest. Chilled.
Yeah, that is true as well, yeah. And also, like, surely we're due a result against Atalanta at some point, just by the law of averages.
Yeah, I think
well, we had a draw recently, didn't we? Last season.
Probably that's trick against them, so we're not there.
Right, anyway, other game that we've got to preview, because we play twice before we record next, play again on a Sunday night. Also, I've noticed that all of our games from now till the end of the season are night matches, and that makes me feel good, because it's just like, I feel like the day games are cursed for us.
Is a 3 o'clock kickoff?
It's not been confirmed what the date and time for that is yet. But before, it's always been an evening match or a night match.
Yeah, if they give us the early kickoff for the final game of the season.
No, well, they've all got to be played at the same time for a start. All games in the final round kick off at the same time.
That's true, yeah.
And then, like, I just think back to the Crotone game, you know, when we needed to win and hope that Inter and Atalanta dropped points. That was definitely an evening. So I'm hoping that they do it as a 5 o'clock or even a 7:45. Yeah. That'd be great. But if it's early and we're in, then who cares, I suppose. Anyway, we've got Cagliari Sunday night. Cagliari, 4 points clear, as Jan said, of the bottom three. They were, to put it in perspective, from round 19 to round 32, they were in the bottom three. They had a massive struggle early in the new year where they lost 10 games out of 11. That was in the middle of that was when we went there and won 2-0. So they really struggled in that run of games, and that was almost curtains for them. But to be fair to them, they've won 4 out of their last 5 in Serie A, and the game that they didn't win was the 1-1 draw against Napoli when they scored in the last minute. So they've picked up. It's Leonardo Semplici, who's been there since back end of February, and they have picked up since he's been there, and they look a good team. You know, I think I mentioned it last week. They're scoring goals again. They put 4 past Parma, they put 3 past Roma, they put 3 past Benevento. That was a massive win against Benevento earlier today or yesterday, whenever it was. They're looking like a good team under Semplici, but the hope is, as you keep saying, that their fate will pretty much be sealed by that point. That's the hope. And also, we have a good record, it feels like, of winning our last home game of the season as well. You know, last season we put 3 past Bologna, I think it was, and in a season recently we beat Fiorentina 5-1, and it just feels like we do all right in that last home game of the season. So I'm feeling pretty confident about this one, even though I do actually quite like a few players that Cagliari have. Nandez, I think, would actually be pretty good for our midfield. João Pedro's class. He's got 13 goals for them this season.
I think this is probably the hardest game of the season to predict. Because we don't know what the table's going to look like going into the game. You know, it's 2 games away. But I think a lot of it rides on that, because there's a chance that we are secure in Champions League going into this game. And if that's the case, we're losing. We're going to be so drunk, hungover, you know, like the team's going to be so celebrated. They're not going to care at all. We would have nothing to play for at that point. And every match that Cagliari has to play, minus us, is also a relegation battle. You know, Fiorentina, yeah, they might be 6 points or 7 points clear right now, but that's not enough. And then they also have another team that's right there. Why can't I think of who it is? Spezia. There's another team that's like Spezia. Yeah. They're all right there. So I think this is a lot more important to them than it is to us. And if we get a result against Torino and Juve get a result against Sassuolo, then we play hard. But if Juve drop points and we win and we're secure, then we don't care and we'll just lose.
Yeah, it's a very hard game to predict. I think, like exactly what you said, it all just depends on what happens midweek. We could be laughing, or we could actually be needing the 3 points, like desperate for it. I'll make two predictions. If we beat Torino, then I'm just going to say it'll be like a draw against Cagliari. If we don't beat Torino, we've still got to win the Cagliari game, then I think we'll win 3-0.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about the Cagliari game. People might think, well, we're Milan, we should be beating them. I would say just ask Napoli how Cagliari played a week or so ago, whenever it was. Napoli spurned some chances and stuff, but Cagliari hung in there. Napoli have blitzed certain teams this season, and they've been good, you know, over the last few rounds at staying in, getting in, and staying in the top four race properly. That's why Cagliari worry me a little bit. That being said, I think we'll win. I think we'll win 3-1. Again, I don't back us to keep a clean sheet. I'm not really sure why. I hope that's a turning point today. I hope we've realised we can keep clean sheet against anyone. You know, if you can keep Cristiano Ronaldo that quiet, then we should have confidence to do the same against Torino and Cagliari. I'll say that we'll win 3-1, but I honestly wouldn't be that surprised if, as you say, things have gone our way and we're looking in a good position and we drop points in a game like this. But I'm keeping the faith at this point. Let's ride the crest of the wave and see where we end up. Who knows? We might be fighting for second. Atalanta might drop points against, maybe not, but you just never know, do you? You never know. We'll have a better idea after the midweek round of games. Right, questions. Right, we've got a few questions. I'll start with the one that's definitely aimed at Jan. This comes from Josip. Maybe it could be Josip Ilicic. Would you rather have Salamakers or Ronaldo as your winger? And why did you pick the Belgian king?
It's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? He's the Belgian king. He's a future Ballon d'Or winner, Champions League winner next year, World Cup winner, Euro 2021, 2020 winner, whatever you want to call it. And he's just clear of all the competition. He's fantastic. Just everything about him's unreal.
I'll put a serious question. Obviously it's serious, but is Salamakers perhaps the best example within the current squad of Pioli and Zlatan's effect on players and helping them grow, but also perhaps the best symbol of the project that we're trying to carry out? Because we bought him for €3.5 million from Anderlecht when he wasn't even an established starter. And now you look at him, you know, he's a starting right winger for one of the biggest clubs in Europe. And he's probably a €30 million player now. He could be, I think it's like between him and maybe Kier, because Kier wasn't getting a game at all at Atalanta. And he came here and he kind of became our leader at the back and become one of the best defenders in Serie A without a doubt. Brought him on leaps and bounds.
Yeah, like, in all seriousness, and I do joke around about it, but he has been fantastic. I think he has been one of our better players, and people just want to write him off for no apparent reason. I really don't get it. He's only 21-year-old. He's only going to improve, and he's been one of our best players this season. And every game, his passing is getting better, his dribbling is getting better. He works hard for the team. He's arguably brought the best out of Calabria. And he looks, at 21, he looks a leader on the pitch, like the way that he gets the team going. You see the pictures from training. He just seems like that guy that everyone wants to be around and that just wants to play and fight for the shirt. And I've been saying it for months. You guys will back me up there that I personally don't think we need an improved right winger on him. I just think we need an upgrade on Castillejo that gives us a different option in games that Salamakers doesn't give us that option, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's obvious at this point that we're going to sell Castillejo, so we do need a natural right winger to come in and replace him. That's just a squad depth thing. It's a formality. But as I said just before we started recording, it puts us in a really good position, in my opinion, because either we realise that Salamakers is, you know, really made of tough stuff and he's the player that he's promised to be and he keeps that starting spot from whoever comes in. Or the player that comes in is just a guaranteed absolute upgrade on him technically, offers the same work rate and stuff like that. But then you've got Salamakers as a fantastic backup to be able to call upon. It just, the whole thing, competition, it promotes Well, it just brings the best out of players generally, and that's what you need in a squad like this. You need young, hungry players who are almost fighting to one-up each other. You know, if an Iconi or whatever were to come in from a different league, let's say we sign a winger from a different league, they're going to take time to adapt, but it's good to know that we're in safe hands in the meantime, because we've got someone who's willing to give absolutely everything for the shirt and for his teammates and for Pioli in particular. I noticed something really interesting, actually. When Brahim Diaz scored, what was his celebration? Went straight over, ran and hugged Pioli. Now, that to me, that might be like, you could say, oh, well, some players do that. They like to hug their manager. That for me was a statement. It was like saying, thank you for showing faith in me. And also, if you're Real Madrid, you're probably looking at that like, oh, shit, he never hugged Zidane. You know?
Yeah, I think there was a player that did it under Gattuso. I can't think who it was. Gattuso, I think it could have been Cutrone, showed him quite a bit of faith. And Cutrone went running to him. Then there was...
Calabria did it as well.
Calabria did it. There was someone else that did it. And I just think it shows that the players still are behind Pioli. They have just hit a rough patch and maybe they ran out a bit of energy. They just lost a bit of the ruthlessness. But that could be a big turning point and just saying, look, yeah, we've had a bit of a downfall, but we're still here. We're still a good side.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Chuck's clearly pretty hyped up. There we go. Yeah, anyway, sorry, next question. Alessandro, you sent this via DM, actually. If Gigi and Romagnoli leave this season, who do you think would get the captain's armband?
I'm on the Calabria train at the minute. He's the longest-serving player at the club. Youth product, absolutely adores the shirt, and he's become, again, he's another... Seems like a leader and he's been fantastic. It'd be between him and Kessie, but I'd go Calabria just for the longevity at the club because that's how it used to be back in the Berlusconi Galliani era. The longest serving player then took over the captaincy, so yeah, I'd go Calabria.
Yeah, I could see it being Kessie. I think he definitely is a commanding figure, you know, El Presidente or whatever. I think he's a good shout for it. But I don't think both of them are leaving, so I don't think it's a problem.
Well, I was just going to ask, do you think that today's result changes anything when it comes to Gigio's future? I personally am a bit pissed off this idea that today would have decided his future either way. This idea that if Juve had beaten us today, he'd have been more likely to join them. That, to me, suggests that he doesn't actually have that much attachment to us at all, because if his own team would have lost, he'd have been more likely to go there. Now, we don't know if that's actually true. It might be that in his head he wants to renew no matter what, or he would never join Juve out of principle. We don't know, but I think today certainly helps. I think if we're top four, he's staying 100%. Apparently, Raiola said today as well that maybe he renews with Milan when he got asked about what's going on, as if to say that that's like the most realistic possibility, but...
I'm honestly over it, and people can call me a liar. I genuinely don't care if he stays or not. Now, like, we've clearly got a good signing waiting in, Mike Maignan, whatever it, from Lille. I'm just completely over the situation. I wouldn't. It's weird. 5 months ago, I was saying, get rid of Romagnoli and strip him of the captaincy when he went through that poor form because he wasn't acting like a captain and give it to Gigi, but it just makes me sick seeing him where the... captain's armband at the minute, and he's just lost. As if it was hard for him to come back the first time from the renewal, but now I think it's just impossible, especially with the fans. I'm just over it.
He's not made it easy for himself in this sense, has he? Like, there's only so many times you can burn and rebuild bridges. You know, the confrontation with the fans, I can't imagine it particularly helped. You know, if you believe it or not, it brought him to tears and all that kind of thing. But there is something that he can do to stop all of this, and he's so far chosen not to do it. So, like, my sympathy's worn very thin. I imagine it's the same for a lot of people. I'm exactly the same as Jan. I actually don't care. I'm sick of writing about it 3 or 4 times a day because that's what's happening. And I just don't want to have to go through this again in a year or 2 years if we make him sign a bridge deal. You know, I'm not about that. Like, let's Maignan on a 5-year contract. You know, he could potentially be our goalkeeper for the next 10 years. And that's a long time in football. Yeah, exactly. He wants to be here. and the bottom line with Gigio is as well, and I know we said this before, it's such a huge financial commitment to keep him at the club that you start thinking, does it show a bigger problem if your goalkeeper's the highest paid player at your club? You know, that to me suggests a massive imbalance in the squad because he ain't the match winner.
As a scenario, right, obviously we know how good he is a goalkeeper, but just say he flops in the Champions League. Can you imagine having someone on that them wages that just isn't up to that standard? Like, you kind of see it with Kepa when he went to Chelsea. Like, he was fantastic in the league for, I think it was Bilbao, wasn't it? But then he's gone to Chelsea and he just flopped hard. Like, maybe he's just at that level. Obviously, we know he's not, but there is a possibility then to be putting someone on 8 to 10 million a year wages that isn't good enough for the Champions League. It's just criminal.
Oh, and by the way, Raiola, he is 20 million for letting him stay.
Yeah.
Disgrace is that. I would definitely put my foot down and say we're not paying him any commission.
Yeah.
That might be a deal breaker, but to me, I don't understand why he should personally profit from this situation, not after everything. Yeah. I saw a journalist say midweek that if Donnarumma does leave, then that'll be the end of the Raiola clients at Milan. Like, we'll ship Romagnoli off as well as a consequence of it. And obviously we know Ibra looks after his own stuff and his renewal's already done, so it doesn't matter. But then you see stuff like us going after Rodrigo De Paul, who is now a Raiola client, and you think, maybe we're still trying to keep him sweet. I don't know. It's an interesting one. Anyway, next question. Greg Lind, do you think Tonali doesn't play as much this season to potentially avoid paying some bonuses to Brescia?
I just think he's not better than the people we have in front of him.
It's an interesting hypothesis because it's not a small amount of bonuses. It's 10 million euros. You know, if that was to be triggered by a certain amount of appearances, I'm surprised that he didn't come on today. Really surprised. I'm not.
Isn't he at risk of a suspension?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think he is.
Right.
And to me, that doesn't make sense to bring him on in the 81st minute in a game.
I was surprised to see Mete go on. That's all I will say. But I know he does give that a little bit more in terms of aerial ability and stuff like that. But yeah, I think Tonali and Hauge, I'll keep banging this drum, have been underused in the last few games. But if he is on a suspension, then I kind of understand that a bit more. But no, I don't think the bonuses... I would imagine the bonuses are incremental anyway, so it's like up to 10 million, but it's not if he plays 20 games, they get an extra 10 million. That's not normally how these kind of things are structured. If anything, I think we'll probably have to pay them a large chunk of it if we get top four. That'll probably be a part of the incentive. I'd say
that was probably most of the bonuses for all of our signings over the summer.
Yeah.
I think it's fair play to him. I suppose in hindsight, will be fair play to Gurley if when we get top four, then you look back and he's let to down and how this is kind of like a transition period, not trying to use him too much and just get a feel for the team. And then in the summer, give him the pre season and actually start integrating them properly into the squad as starters.
It would be nice to have a proper pre-season because obviously it was a shortened pre-season last season. I know we've got the Euros and stuff, but you know, they're still going to get a pre-season and that'll be good. And I hope we kind of do our business early as well in the summer so we can really get any players blooded in.
I'd like to do it before the Euros, just before any players' prices rocket. So, for example, like I've seen that we've been linked to Malinowski, who I've been banging on about this week. If he has a good Euros with Ukraine, his price will just rocket. So players like that, I'd rather just get done nice and early. A bit like when we did Ben Anser before the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah. Sorry, next question. So this comes from Fossa DIM. This was actually, funnily enough, asked before the game because I put the question tweet out. I put it out after the game, didn't I? So this did actually come in after the game. Do you think Pioli is fit to lead this team next season if we don't make it to the Champions League from here? And he's gone.
I think it would take a massive collapse for us to not make Champions League at this point. Mm-hmm. I think we've all but wrapped it up. So if we don't get it, there's some big problems and a rebuild might be in the future, but honestly, I'm not even putting too much thought into it. I think it's just about done.
I think it's a valid question in that regard. Like, if we mess it up from here, then something has gone catastrophically wrong. And then you start to think, well, how can that happen after a performance like this? So I understand it in that sense, but no. Maldini said it before the game. He's our guy, you know. Let's go with the call. I think that the biggest indication so far has been that we renew Ibra for another year, because we've gone with that now. We're having continuity. For example, if we were even thinking about changing head coach, you ain't renewing a 39-year-old bloke, because what if the head coach comes in and doesn't want this guy on $7 million a year? You know, you don't make decisions like that without having an idea where you're going in the future. So I think that it was probably already pretty much mapped out.
I don't think you need to know my opinion on it.
No. this is number two. I'll take the time at this point to mention as well that we've got an exclusive on the website at the moment, under news exclusive, with Pietro Balzona Perotta. Great journalist, has helped us out with some Mercato stuff in the past. So it was like a 10-question Q&A with him. There's some stuff in there about the transfer market and about the kind of players that we might be targeting. Want a centre-forward, want a right-winger, we want a midfielder. And then we'll see about the defence, I guess. But the second question that came from Fossa was, which positions should we strengthen next year? Assuming we may or may not extend Gigio and Hakan.
I think getting your goalkeeper and interest I've done with Gigi, I know it's going to cause a stir, but fuck him. get a fourth choice centre mid in, and a new number 10 and a striker. I think that's it. I don't think we need massive. I don't think we need a big overhaul. I just think we need the right signings in the right positions and a couple of backups, a couple of youngsters, whatever. And I think we're good to go.
Yeah, I think we need a right wing, whether it's someone to improve on Sally or to be his backup, whichever's fine to me. Samu just can't be making appearances anymore. And I think we need another striker, especially with Zlatan being, you know, injured again after today. We don't know what his next season's going to look like. Like, if you would have told me at the beginning of this year that he was going to miss 30 games, I would have laughed. There's no way. So I think we need another striker. And it needs to be a top caliber, but young striker. Someone like a Vlahovic, you know, someone who is banging him in that can actually lead the line when Zlatan's out, but isn't going to be completely distanced from the team when Zlatan's in.
It does feel a bit like we missed the boat, you know, with Vlahovic. If we really were pressing with his agent, it'd be nice to kind of get a deal tied up early rather than late.
20 goals. Yeah.
Well, he's just flying now, isn't he? Like, I think 17 of those are in the second half of the season. That is mental.
As much as I'd like him next season, I think you can kind of strike a deal by leaving him there for one more year as a sweetener with Grisso and just be like, let's get him in, but you can have him for another year. And he is, for example, how good for it for a year on loan. Just try sweeten the deal and then be like, we'll take him after that. You've got a year to find yourself a new striker. Year to get like European football, so you've got the money coming in. I don't know, something like that could help.
Well, the thing with Fiorentina as well is that even though the media says they're tough negotiators, they let their best player in Federico Chiesa go on loan with an obligation to buy.
Is it an obligation? I've seen somewhere that it's an option to buy, which is huge.
What, you think they might not do it? Would you go in for someone like Chiesa, let's say? Juve decide not to use their option.
Well, not just that, but like just as an example, Chiesa's like, I'm not playing at Europa League. I can get a Champions League club. Do you know what I mean? Something like that. I don't know. I'd seen somewhere that it were an option. I could be totally wrong, but this week on my timeline.
According to Wikipedia, it's a two-year loan deal, so he's going to be there next season regardless. But it's a conditional obligation to buy. So I don't know if that's going to be based on appearances, goals, where Juve finish, but interesting idea to kind of hijack a deal like that, because Chiesa has been great for Juve, and I stand by the fact that he would have probably completed our squad this year. Having him over Castillejo and then Salamakers would have just been amazing depth, you know?
Yeah, because Salamaca's needed a new boot cleaner, to be fair. So, yeah.
The Belgian. Right. The Belgian
conscious genius. Of time.
Are we conscious of time? Yeah, let me just double check that I didn't miss any really important questions. All right, let's do one last one and then I'll wrap it up. Ludwig, what's your dream attacking four for next season?
Attacking four?
Yeah, as in ahead of Ismail Benacer and Kessie.
Salamakers.
Hmm.
Malinowski.
Hmm.
Leao. And Vlahovic.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest.
It's a tough one. Is that? It's a tough one. I will go with on the right wing, Salamakers / Jonathan Ikone. Whoever ends up performing better out of them, whatever. Number 10, Rodrigo De Paul. And let's actually play him there because he can beat a man, and I think that he would be good in our system as a number 10. Just don't shoehorn him out wide, please. On the left wing, Rebic for now. I'm tempted to say Leao because that would imply that he's gone up a gear and he's gone, but I think Rebic for now. And then up front, Vlahovic as well, definitely. I wouldn't be upset if it was Belotti at all. If it's one of those two, then it's looking pretty good. There's some talented young strikers out there that I hope we're monitoring. You know, we did actually get a question asking thoughts on Darwin Nunez at Benfica, and we have been linked with him, and he's good. He's worth keeping an eye on. Raspadori is another one. I mentioned him after the Sassuolo game and said he looks like a more well-rounded Cotrone at the age of 21. I think he's going to go to a big club. But yeah, AJ.
It's my turn now. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to go Berardi instead of Salamakers.
Inter di merda.
Go Brahim Diaz, renew his loan for another season. I don't know. I'm just going to ride today's hype. Mm. And do Zlatan up top. And out left, Robin Gosens.
Ooh.
It won't happen.
More of a wing back, but I'll let you have it.
Yeah, but I'm like, yeah.
Got another one. Jan's going to like this. Ikone right wing, Salamaca's attacking midfielder.
Oh,
let's give it a go. It could work. I think it could work.
It's filled.
He drifts inside.
It is, because I remember a quote from Kevin De Bruyne, I think, was coming through at Chelsea. He actually watched Salamaca's at the age of 10 and thought, wow, I need to become like him. So, yeah, I reckon Salamaca's attacking mid, number 10 would work.
That is just the best way to sign off the podcast, in my opinion. we've gone over an hour again, haven't we? It's becoming a theme now. Thank you very much if you made it this far. And a reminder to follow us on all social media. You'll see it's growing across the bottom. Subscribe and turn on notifications if you're on YouTube. And check out our shop if you haven't already. We've got some merchandise on there for like Legends inspired designs and the Sempre Milan merch. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Been joined again by Anthony, who's muted because his dog's barking. And now he's back.
That's exactly right. He is barking, and I'm going to make this quick because he's going to keep going. So it's been real.
Yeah, guys, see you next week, hopefully, as our first Champions League podcast.
Ooh, be nice with that. If it's 6 points from six, then we're basically there, aren't we? Thank you very much for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you in a week's time.
Andrea Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, gol!